This is Yaron Brook, guest speaking on Dr. Leonard Peikoff's podcast. I'm here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. Your real-life questions specifically to current events, including politics, economics, and foreign policy. My answers are posted every other week on Mondays. Leonard will continue to answer questions, but now only on alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes at www.peikoff.com. If you have a question to ask me, simply go to peikoff.com/questions. What is the possibility that the virtue of selfishness, capitalism, the unknown ideal, and Atlas Shrugged could be translated into Arabic? And if so, what do you think the implications would or could be? So a number of Ayn Rand's essays have already been translated into Arabic, and actually on the website that is hosted by and created by the Ayn Rand Center Israel. So the translations are happening in Israel, and they're being hosted in Israel because they have the most to gain from it, I guess. And it would be great, and I know some Arabs who are interested in doing these translations, but there are no publishers in the Arab world who would publish the books. But I think we will continue, or some people will continue to do the translations, publish them online, because there are individuals that can be affected in the Arab world this way. Now, is it going to have a huge impact? I don't think so, any more than it's had a huge impact in English or in any other language it's been translated in on the culture, while it has a profound impact on individuals. So if we can get these books translated into Arabic, it will have a profound impact on individuals within those cultures, and it'll give them maybe the backbone to escape those cultures and come to the West. But then some of you would actually not allow them to immigrate into the United States because they're Arabs or Muslims, and that would be unbelievably tragic. So if there's anybody out there who's interested in funding the translation of Ayn Rand into Arabic, drop me a note. If the American sense of life has prevented America from going communist, what prevents such egalitarian countries like Sweden, who have no founding documents or culture of individualism, from becoming communists? Well, I think that's an oversimplification. It's more than the American sense of life that's prevented us from becoming communist. It's American sense of life and founding documents and the evidentiary history of what communism would lead to, and the fact that we have a successful, wealthy economy and society, and people who have a vested interest in keeping their wealth and not having it redistributed on a massive scale. So there are a lot of things that are preventing America, and the same thing is happening in Sweden. And to say that Sweden has no culture of individualism, I think, is wrong. I think that Sweden does have a culture of individualism. The whole West does. Even Japan has a culture of individualism. You wouldn't be rich and Western if you didn't have a culture of individualism, to some extent. That is the characteristic of the West. What is the West? The West are those countries that are essentially individualistic and value reason. That's what characterizes the West. Russia, which was not individualistic ever, and was not based on reason. It had a huge respect for faith, Russian Orthodoxy, but mysticism generally, was where communism succeeded. It didn't succeed in the West. Marx thought it would succeed in England, but it didn't, because the English are fundamentally individualistic, as are the Swedes. Now, that doesn't mean they're individualistic as we or as I understand that term, but it means they have more of an orientation towards individualism than certainly Russia has, or Venezuela has, or many other countries around the world have. And that's what makes them Western. That's what makes them rich. That's why when socialism in Sweden failed, they reversed many of those policies. Starting in 1994, government spending in Sweden has been on the decline, both as a percentage of GDP and in real terms. That's why, in spite of massive redistribution of wealth in Sweden, they regulate their economy less than the United States regulates its economy. And it's why, from the late 19th century until about 1960, Sweden was probably the most economically free country in the world. It was as economically free as the United States. It was the bastion of capitalism. That's how the Swedes became so rich, so that they could redistribute all their wealth over the next 20, 30 years. But I think you have a too dim view of Europe. and a too one-dimensional view of what keeps America from becoming communist. American sense of life is certainly part of that, and it's why we have resisted it and resisted even elements of socialism so much. And of course, that is dissipating here. But the difference today between the United States and Europe is nowhere near as big as it was 30 years ago, certainly nowhere near as big as it was 60 years ago. And that's because we've declined, not because they've gotten worse. It's because we've gotten so much worse. And the real issue in Europe is that they have no idea what Western civilization is about, what makes them successful. They have no respect for the individualism and reason that is still permeate their culture. And therefore, they are losing it, and they will lose it over time. Whether that leads them towards communism or some other form of authoritarianism, I think it's another form of authoritarianism. By the way, one of the things that protects Europe from communism is the fact that they experienced communism. So all they had to do is remember what Eastern Europe looked like, and they don't want that. It doesn't mean they don't want authoritarianism. It's just they know communism's bad. And what indeed Europe is drifting towards is much more a bureaucratic fascism, a system where the Brussels bureaucracy rules Europe, and where even speech is regulated, but not in the name of communism, but in the name of hate speech and dictated by a bureaucratic mechanism in Brussels. Why is it Mao to trade with Chinese business if forced labor is being supplied by the Chinese government and the tax revenues are being used to arm the Red Army? Those are big assumptions. There is some forced labor used in China, but as a percentage of the total workforce, it is insignificant. You know, certainly iPhones and 90-plus percent, maybe 100% of the products we have in the United States are not being produced by forced labor. And, yeah, the Red Army is being armed. The tax revenues are doing that. Every country has an army. I don't particularly fear the Red Army. Both are no match for the U.S. Army. But I don't think China right now and in the foreseeable future is a threat to the United States. So I don't have a problem with the Chinese arming themselves. They have threats from Islam in the West. They have threats from a pretty aggressive Russia in the North. So I'm not surprised that the Chinese want a strong army. But China is an authoritarian country. People are not free in China, but they're not slaves. And in a world of mixed economies as the world is today, in some respects, they're freer in China. There's less wealth redistribution in China. Taxes are actually lower in China. There's less business regulation, but there's more corruption. These are all shades of gray. If China was clearly evil, I would avoid their goods. I would not buy goods from Iran. I would not buy goods even from Cuba, which I think is a much more miserable, offensive place than China is. But I buy goods from Vietnam and I buy goods from China because these are now mixed economies that have far more freedom in the economic realm than not, particularly in a world where in almost every other place in the world, we're losing our economic freedoms. They're at least gaining some economic freedoms. If I knew a product was produced by forced labor, I would not buy it. Do you think the United Kingdom should quit the European Union? Yes, absolutely. I think the United Kingdom should leave the European Union. I think it has to have the right policies when it does it. That is, it should still have zero tariffs with the rest of the European Union. It should, I think, allow for travel, easy travel between the UK and the European Union. That is, it should take all the benefits of the European Union and should discard all the hassle. And the hassle is regulations, labor laws, and all the restrictions, all the bureaucratic nonsense coming out of Brussels. So what you want is the free movement of capital, labor, and what you don't want are the regulations and particularly, you know, on business and speech codes and control over labor markets and all the rest of what the statism that emanates out of Brussels. A look at Google Trends shows that there is far more discussion of Ayn Rand in the U.S. than in any other country. If so, why are other countries getting freer while we are going to Bernie Sanders land? because as much discussion of Ayn Rand as there is in the United States, it's not enough to change the overwhelming dominance of the leftist ideology in this country. And I include Republicans as part of that leftist ideology. Just look at the Donald Trump campaign, which advocates for very much the same things as in many areas as Bernie Sanders when it comes to economics. So we live in a country today that's dominated by leftist intellectuals almost as much as Europe and some other parts in the world. The trend towards more freedom is in those parts of the world that have experienced communism or have experienced authoritarianism and know that it's evil, and they're grasping for something. And for now, they don't need a philosophical change. They just need something better than what they have, and they're willing to experiment with more freedom, and they're doing that. They're not philosophically changing, so the experiment with freedom, I don't believe, will last. But if you're Venezuela, you're going to kick the bastards out and bring in people who are going to institute more free market policies, and you're going to move in the right direction, hopefully. But that's not because there was a philosophical change, but because people realized this is bad. People don't want to die. People don't want to commit suicide, even in the name of altruism. And at the end of the day, the Soviet Union collapsed. Venezuela will collapse. Statism collapses. The Nazis lost. Statism doesn't work. The question is, how do you create a system that is free and sustainable? And for that, you need a philosophical revolution. For that, you need Ayn Rand. And you need a lot more Ayn Rand being discussed by people who actually know what Ayn Rand stands for and know the philosophy much more than exists today in the United States. Is the Quran equivalent to the Critique of Pure Reason by Immanuel Kant? No. That would be gave way too much credit to the Quran. The Quran is like the Old Testament or the New Testament, just more violent. Well, more violent than the New Testament. I'm not sure if it's more violent than the Old Testament. The Old Testament's pretty violent and pretty brutal and pretty barbaric if you actually study it and read it. And if you take God's word seriously, if you really believe that every word there is God's, then there's no big difference between the Quran and the Old Testament. The difference is that the Muslims take the Quran more seriously than Jews or Christians take the Old Testament. You know, Christians today are not, they don't take their religion very seriously. They go to church on Sunday and they talk about God, but they don't know what all that means. They haven't studied the Old Testament. If they did, and then they have preachers who interpreted it to mean, Sermon on the Mount suddenly goes from socialist utopia, which is exactly what it is, to a capitalist statement, which is, you know, that's a perversion of Christianity. That's what most American Christians believe in. I think is a perverse interpretation of Christianity. But go for it. You know, I'm all for it because it's a better interpretation of Christianity. Critique of Pure Reason is a work of deep philosophy. It's an integrated system of philosophy. It's a huge philosophical achievement. Now, it's unbelievably destructive. It's evil. In a sense, it's much more evil than the Quran because it is the work of one man. A man who understood, I think, what he was doing. The Quran is just a religious text, you know, written for the sake of power and for the sake of disseminating that power. Critique of Pure Reason is an act of nihilism. It's a pure act of destruction. And if you think about the consequences of the Critique of Pure Reason, in Ayn Rand's view, it is the destruction of capitalism, the turning of the Industrial Revolution into a negative instead of the amazing positive that it was. It is the rise of communism. It is the rise of Nazism with all the deaths associated with that all across the world. Now, Immanuel Kant has a lot to account for, a lot to account for. And in that sense, he's far more vicious in terms of what he did than the writers of the Quran or the writers of the Old Testament. They, you know, that was just a power play, simple power play. This is the what Kant did was to destroy the Enlightenment, the greatest intellectual period in human history, maybe only second to the Aristotle's period, but systematically, consciously to destroy that. and to drive Western civilization as close to the darkness as possible. Think World War II.
If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.